Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the growing possibility that the confrontation between Russia and Ukraine could turn into a war, and get an analysis of Putin's greatest vulnerability, and that is from banks, not tanks. The largest foreign investor in Russia up until 2005, Bill Browder, the chief executive and founder of Hermitage Capital, joins us to discuss the billions Putin and his cronies have stolen and parked abroad, palatial wealth which, by comparison, makes the just-deposed Yanukovych look like a minor thief. Browder's lawyer, Sergei Magnitsky, was murdered by the Putin regime, and we'll look into whether the 2002 U.S. law, the Sergei Magnitsky Rule of Law Accountability Act, could be applied to Putin. Then we will speak with a former CIA veteran, Melvin Goodman, about Senator Feinstein's powerful speech condemning the CIA for intimidating the Senate Intelligence Committee she heads and accusing the agency of possibly spying on her Senate staffers. We'll discuss the extraordinary efforts the CIA is making to suppress the 6,000-page report on the Bush-Cheney era's secret torture and rendition program and assess whether this report will see the light of day given the apparent resolve displayed by Senator Feinstein Tuesday, who up until now has appeared to have had a cozy relationship with the intelligence community she oversees. Then finally, we will look into an editorial in Tuesday's New York Times, "The Democrats Stand Up to the Kochs," and discuss how Democrats in the U.S. Senate are starting to fight back against the Koch brothers' efforts to buy a Senate led by Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, who has promised his benefactors that he will, quote, be the leader of the forces that take on the war on coal, clearing the way for the Kochs to pollute at will. Beverly Gage, a professor of history at Yale University and author of The Day Wall Street Exploded, A Story of America in the First Age of Terror, joins us to discuss how much the oligarchs in the New Gilded Age are getting off lightly. And joining us now is Bill Browder, chief executive and founder of Hermitage Capital Markets. He was the largest foreign investor in Russia until November of 2005, when he was suddenly denied entry into the country and declared a threat to national security by the Russian government for exposing corruption. Since 2009, when his lawyer, Sergei Magnitsky, died in a Russian prison after uncovering a $230 million fraud committed by Russian government officials, he has been leading a global campaign to expose the corruption and human rights abuses endemic in Russia. As a result of his campaign, the Sergei Magnitsky Rule of Law Accountability Act was signed into U.S. law in 2012, imposing visa bans and asset freezes on certain officials involved in Magnitsky's death. Browder is currently working to have similar legislation passed across the European Union as a means to seek justice for Magnitsky and fight government-backed corruption in Russia. Welcome to Background Briefing, Bill Browder.
Thank you very much.
And it does appear that Vladimir Putin's warning to the oligarchs back in 2012 that they should bring their assets back from outside Russia because it makes them too vulnerable to moves by foreign governments. It's looking as if now that is both prophetic and Putin did not listen to the oligarchs in terms of making this move into Crimea.
Well, I think that there's actually a much bigger story here, which is sort of the elephant in the room, which hasn't been picked up by very many people, which is that Putin, what you have to understand about Putin is that he doesn't run the country like a normal leader for the benefit of the people. He runs what I would describe as probably the most well-developed kleptocracy in the world, where he and the guys around him steal lots and lots of money as the main purpose of running the country. And so he's stolen a lot of money, and he's now in this strange position where he really can't enjoy the money because if at any point he gets kicked out, he'll be kicked out like Yanukovych, where they're all just freeze his assets around the world. And so I believe that the war that he's just started is not about Ukraine. It's about creating a distraction so people don't get kick him out for being such a kleptocrat. So this is a personal survival strategy for Vladimir Putin to keep people's mind off of what's really going on, which is all the money for the country went to him and his cronies and not to the people.
So I thought that he was a little less brazen than Yanukovych, that he regulated the oligarchs, but you're saying he shakes them down like...
Oh, my God. I think you're wrong. Yanukovych is a sort of a bit player compared to Putin. When the Putin regime falls, we can see his palaces. It'll make Yanukovych look like a nobody. I mean, the stuff that Putin's got. I mean, this is major league corruption and major league palaces and huge money spent all over the place on Putin's personal possessions, not just in Russia, but in different countries in Western Europe, and probably even in America.
And presumably through cutouts in the West.
Yeah, nothing is registered in his name. It's registered into the name of these big oligarchs. So when you see these oligarchs and you see them on the Forbes rich list, their wealth isn't what's being reported. Their wealth is probably much less because they're holding, on behalf of Putin and on behalf of other senior Russian government officials, houses and boats and various airplanes, bank accounts and various other things. And so when the West is going to go after Putin and his cronies, they'll eventually find that stuff in the accounts of oligarchs. And so they have good reason to be scared because all their money is intermingled.
So my understanding is that clearly Putin leaned on Yanukovych to reverse the EU deal and to join Russia. And one of the subtexts that I understand from that was that the EU required Ukraine to open up the books on its dealings with Gazprom. And I take it that Gazprom is Putin's slush fund. Was that a factor in starting this crisis?
Well, I don't know that specific story, but I can imagine that it's actually a much broader thing, which is that Russia needs this, what they call the Eurasian Union, where they wanted to create their own sort of version of the European Union with Ukraine and Belarus and Kazakhstan and Armenia and so on and so forth, and Ukraine would have been a big part of that, and when Ukraine was leaning towards Europe, it was sort of I think it was more of a reputational slap in Putin's face than anything else, that somehow the EU was going to win. Putin sees everything as a zero sum game. And if Europe was going to get it, if Europe somehow created some connection with Ukraine, then somehow that would make Russia much worse off. But I don't think that anyone anywhere could have imagined that by Putin playing this sort of manipulative game of trying to buy Yanukovych in this deal, that it would lead to a revolution and then an invasion. I don't think even the Russians probably could have predicted that. I think this thing has just spun so far out of control that nobody, nobody could have imagined this.
Again, I'm speaking with Bill Barada, who's the chief executive and founder of Hermitage Capital Markets. He was the largest foreign investor in Russia until November 2005, when he was suddenly denied entry to the country and declared a threat to national security by Russian government officials for exposing corruption. Since then, he's been leading a global campaign to expose the corruption and human rights abuses endemic in Russia. And as a result of his campaign, the Sergei Magnitsky Rule of Law Accountability Act was signed into U.S. law in 2012, imposing visa bans and asset freezes on certain officials. So is it possible then, Bill Browder, that this whole misadventure on Putin's part could blow up in his face?
Well, I think it's extremely possible. I mean, the other thing you need to understand about Putin is that he's not a strategist, he's a tactician, which means that he hasn't thought through, like the famous chess players of the world think, eight moves ahead. He's not thinking eight moves ahead. He's thinking one or two moves ahead. And I don't think he knows how this thing is going to play itself out, and I don't think anyone really knows. And I think that he's really overstepped because Russia... This is not Russia from 30 years ago. Russia may have a lot of money in the bank, but they don't have a strong army. They're not in a position to go around fighting big wars. And what they're banking on right now is that the West will effectively do nothing when they take over Crimea and possibly take over Eastern Ukraine. That's what Putin is banking on. If he was actually, if someone calls his bluff here, he's got a pretty weak hand. And so, I don't think he knows, and I don't think the West knows how this thing's going to play. And I mean, personally, when I lived in Russia, I've actually played poker with oligarchs, and it's the most interesting experience I've ever had because they bluff every hand. It's very easy to play poker with oligarchs because all you have to do is stay in the hand. When you've got a good hand, they try to bluff you, and then they lose. And Putin's got a weak hand. He's bluffing everybody. Everybody is behaving like he's running some type of superpower, but he's got a very weak army, and he's got a very weak situation all around. And so who knows how it's going to play itself out, but it could easily end up where he's overplayed his hand and not good things happen to him.
Well, of course, that was often said during the Cold War, that the Americans play poker and the Russians play chess. But in this case, if he has so much money parked abroad, then he is as vulnerable as any of the oligarchs, as you've pointed out, because the money is commingled. Would that deter him? Because one of the fears that I have is that as bad as Putin is, since he's eradicated all political opposition and basically killed politics in Russia, could we end up with someone worse?
Well, at the moment, I don't see anybody worse than Putin. I mean, here's a man who's gone and invaded a peaceful neighbor. How could you get worse than that? I mean, you know, he's been running an authoritarian regime. He was personally was involved in the cover up of a murder of my lawyer. You know, he's an evil man. I certainly wouldn't advise anybody to support him because the next guy is going to be worse. That doesn't make any sense.
Well, then what makes sense, surely, is to expose him for who he is. It doesn't do anybody any good to pretend. I mean, that was one of the problems that Chamberlain had in Munich with Hitler, was that Chamberlain came out of that old school of the British gentleman diplomacy, and he simply didn't know that he was negotiating with a gangster.
Well, and this is exactly what Vladimir Putin is, and there's been a policy in the United States for the last 6 or so years called the reset policy with Russia, where everybody wanted to effectively appease Russia. And I've been arguing against it, saying that you know, these people are criminals. This is a mafia country, and you can't appease mafia gangsters. And this invasion of Ukraine has just showed the whole world how with this reset policy really was a complete and utter naive failure of foreign policy from the United States standpoint. And now we've got to catch up. We've got to do something. Now the good news is that because Putin he's a man of money, and he's a man about money, we have a much different type of leverage than we had during the Soviet days. All you have to do is find his money and freeze his money, and you've created you've got him right where it counts.
So is that in the cards, do you think? I mean, why do we not, as I say, I don't understand why we don't call a spade a spade. And, you know, one of the things that gangsters always crave for is respect. And we just give him respect for free, don't we?
Well, we have been, but I think that I think he's created a situation where it makes it now impossible to do that. I mean, the language that's come out of the U.S. government in the last few days and come out of the British Foreign Office and various other places shows that nobody is doing that anymore. Now, the question is, how tough are the sanctions against Putin and Russia going forward? And I will be very disappointed if there's not serious asset freezes and visa bans of Russian officials. But from what I can tell, that is what they're discussing. And I would argue that may be just enough to at least stop them from any further territorial ambition. It may not be that they're going to, it surely will be that Russia's not going to retreat from Crimea, but if you slap on hardcore financial asset freezes and visa sanctions, it may be just enough to prevent them from doing anything worse.
Well, but how do you think, though, this is playing inside Russia itself? Because there's some polls indicating that there's a certain amount of disquiet on the part of the majority of Russians about the possibility of shedding blood with Russians and Ukrainians shooting at each other. There's a great deal of historical, cultural, and familial ties between these two countries. On the other hand, you can see the propaganda machine is demonizing, making it seem like the entire new government in Kiev are a bunch of Nazis and anti-Semites, when in fact the prime minister of this new government is Jewish. And that's what's disturbing about the possibility of, it's the same MO they used in Crimea, which is to create this imaginary pogrom against Russians in order to liberate Russians. And now they're saying the same thing about eastern Ukraine, that people there, Russian-speaking people, are being oppressed. So it's kind of scary that they could even go further, or Putin could even go further. But my understanding is that this is not necessarily going to sit well with the Russian people once Ukrainians and Russians start spilling blood.
I wish that that were true, and I wish that there was a civil society in Russia which could contain the ambitions of Putin, but unfortunately there isn't. And it doesn't really matter to Putin or to Russia what the people think, because they don't really have an opportunity to express themselves. This is an authoritarian regime. The one thing I would point out is that Putin was able to become elected. He became the president back in year 2000 by starting a war. He started a war against the Chechens. He demonized the Chechens and then went in and basically leveled Chechnya and drove away lots and lots of people, killed lots and lots of people. And on the back of the fervor of that war, he became the president. And his presidency in the last 2 years has been substantially weakened by the corruption. And he needed this war. He needed this distraction to sort of solidify his base. And I would argue that once you get involved in a full-scale war, people don't really, there is no opposition. And I think that that's what he's up to right now, to basically prevent himself from getting kicked out of office. And so I don't see that, that public opinion in Russia is going to do anything that will dissuade him. And in fact, I would imagine that as this thing escalates, people have no choice but to sort of stand behind their president in a war, whether it's with their cousins in Ukraine or with somebody else.
Well, of course, when we went into Iraq, you know, the press and the public were behind George W. Bush's monstrous mistake. So we're not immune from that kind of jingoism. And I imagine it will also be the case in Russia. But you, Bill Browder, were pointing out earlier that the Russian military is not what it used to be. So how long before they get – I talked to a defense analyst who writes for Novaya Gazeta, Dr. Pavel Felgenhauer. He's one of the – you know, Novaya Gazeta is one of the last pieces of the press that Putin doesn't control. And he suggested that it could get really ugly for the Russians.
Well, I think it could. If you go back and we have one data point to analyze, which was the war with Georgia. In 2008, Russia invaded Georgia, which is a tiny little country. It's a country of just a few million people. And they really had a hard time getting themselves organized and defeating the Georgians, which was effectively a ragtag army of very few people with very little equipment. Ukraine is not the same thing at all. Ukraine is a country with 55 million people and a real army. It may not be as big as the Russian army, but it's a real army. And the Ukrainians will be protecting their own country, whereas you have a bunch of demoralized Russian soldiers that don't particularly want to be firing on their neighbors in the first place. The equipment might be a little bit more modern on the Russian side than the Ukrainian side, but it's not a completely unfair fight. I don't think Putin really wants to go to war. He wants to bluff his way into Ukraine and stop there. I don't think that he would value a bloody fight, but I think he's ready for it if that's what it takes. And I don't think he minds, because it's not a democracy, he's not going to lose his position as president if he has, you know, tens of thousands of soldiers dying. It's not the same thing as it is in America.
Well, Bill Browder, you were, of course, featured recently in a 60 Minutes piece about your lawyer, Sergei Magnitsky, who was tortured and died in a prison for exposing the theft of $230 million by Russian government officials. Is it therefore possible then to expand the Sergei Magnitsky Rule of Law Accountability Act to cover Putin at a certain point if this thing... I suspect you're quite correct that Putin doesn't want a war, but my sense is it could happen because it's such a tense situation. But what about that idea? Because at the end of the day, it seems to me that when you're dealing with a gangster, the only thing that is going to get to him is that he might lose all of that money that he's assiduously stashed away around the world.
Indeed, and I think so. I agree with you. I think that there's a real probability of war. It could happen at any moment. I agree with you that this guy is all about money, and he cares about his money, and that is the biggest leverage we have. It's the famous chess player and human rights activist Garry Kasparov says, "Let's hit them in the bank." We can use banks instead of tanks, and I agree with that. And the Sergei Magnitsky Rule of Law Accountability Act, which was named after my murdered lawyer Sergei Magnitsky, was a policy tool that was defined for this era. This is the new technology for global. It's going after global kleptocrats by freezing their assets and banning their visas. And it's a piece of law on the books in the United States. It doesn't just apply to Sergei Magnitsky. It applies to all other Russian human rights abusers. and it's on the books, ready to go, to be applied and implemented to the people who are involved in this invasion of Ukraine. And Vladimir Putin is the number one guy on that list, and there's many others. And I think that either the Magnitsky Act itself or some version of it will eventually be the tool that's going to be used, and probably used relatively soon against the Russians if they don't back down.
Well, just in closing, to return to the notion that you could end up with something worse than Putin, which you, I think, fairly effectively argued that there couldn't be anything worse than Putin. But the question still remains is that since he's destroyed Russian democracy and politics and eradicated it effectively, is there anything that could, you know, rise up, any green shoots, any hope here in terms of, because I understand within Moscow itself, the elite don't like Putin. The Narod, that are subject to his propaganda and out in the middle of the country, seem to support him, but he doesn't seem to have a lot of support in his hometown, or where he's situated, I should say. His hometown, of course, is Leningrad, I believe. Or St. Petersburg.
St. Petersburg. Well, I think that there's all sorts of possibilities of people coming in and doing the job. You know, Ukraine was a far more democratic country, even with Yanukovych, than Russia. But, you know, they were quickly able to assemble a new interim government, which at first glance seems to be quite responsible and international and thoughtful. And I don't see any reason why, if Putin were to be deposed, that Russia couldn't muster up its own proper replacement for this criminal regime, the assumption that somebody worse is going to come along, I think, is a very pessimistic way to view politics, and I don't think anyone at this point can imagine anyone worse coming along. And I know quite a few opposition politicians in Russia who would be a hell of a lot better, I hope and pray that this menace, Vladimir Putin, will eventually find his way into the International Criminal Court in The Hague and not running Russia.
Well, Bill Browder, I thank you so much for joining us here.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Bill Browder, who's the chief executive and founder of Hermitage Capital Markets. He was the largest foreign investor in Russia until November 2005, when he was suddenly denied entry to the country and declared a threat to national security by the Russian government for exposing corruption. Since 2009, when his lawyer Sergei Magnitsky died in a Russian prison after uncovering a $230 million fraud committed by Russian government officials, he's been leading a global campaign to expose the corruption and human rights abuses endemic in Russia. As a result of this campaign, the Sergei Magnitsky Rule of Law Accountability Act was signed into U.S. law in 2012, imposing visa bans and asset freezes on certain officials involved in the Magnitsky death. Browder is currently working to have similar legislation passed across the European Union as a means to seek justice for Magnitsky and to fight government-backed corruption in Russia. We're going to take a brief station break and be looking into Senator Feinstein's powerful speech condemning the CIA.